Welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence. What you are about to hear was originally recorded in 2010 as research for my book, Public Speaking Superpowers. After going through all this content, I've decided to release these 80-plus recordings as a bi-weekly podcast. I hope you enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence. Today, I'm speaking with Tim David. Tim is a professional speaker and comedy mentalist. After 15 years as a full-time entertainer, for the past 5 years, he has brought his mind-reading skills to corporate audiences, entertaining and educating about communication, success, and the power of the human mind. Welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers, Tim.
Thank you so much, Karma. Pleasure to be here.
Just so listeners can get a feel for your unique expertise, could you tell us a little about your journey to success in public speaking?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really interesting, the title of this project that you're working on, the superpowers, really stuck out to me because very often after I get off the stage, people actually accuse me of having genuine superpowers. So I thought this would be a perfect fit. When you said in the introduction that I do mind reading, that is only about half true. The truth is I'm not psychic. I don't have any special abilities or anything like that. What I do is I use various techniques known as mentalism, is sort of the umbrella term for it. But it includes techniques like reading body language, reading eye movement, looking at facial expression, to get an idea of what might be going on in someone's mind, and then putting all those pieces together to create that illusion that I'm actually reading their mind. Now, despite, again, telling people over and over again I'm not psychic and I don't have any special abilities, stuff that I do on stage seems to convince them otherwise, and again, I always get accused of having superpowers. This, like I said, seemed like a perfect fit for what I do. And really how that led to speaking is kind of a unique story as well. I was originally just doing this as entertainment. This was just something that I would go into a corporation for their holiday party or for an after-dinner program after their employee appreciation banquet or something along those lines. And I would just do these demonstrations of mentalism, interact with the audience, have a good time. And when you start revealing people's thoughts, of course, it's very funny. So there's a lot of comedy involved too. But really what happened was people who saw me do what I do began to think how it could be applied in other areas. So, for example, someone came up to me and said, hey, this is really amazing how you are able to read people and persuade them, because that's the other half of what I do, is the subliminal persuasion element, trying to push someone towards making a specific choice without saying, hey, choose this. So they really started applying that in a lot of different areas, but largely in the area of sales. People will say, can you teach my sales staff how to do what you do? And of course, that's launched my public speaking business as it is now. I do a lot of trainings and keynotes on this topic of the power of the human mind, but more importantly, the power of persuasion and of communication on a nonverbal level.
And people are probably experiencing it on a verbal level, although you're using nonverbal techniques. Is that accurate?
What do you mean by experiencing it on a verbal level?
Well, I mean, if you're using nonverbal cues to persuade someone, they're not necessarily aware of them.
Correct. So, for example, what will happen is I will influence someone to make a choice. Let's say I'll have them choose a number between 1 and 10, and I use hand gestures and I use certain language to guide them towards a specific number. Let's say it's the number 7. So what will happen is I'll tell them afterwards, here's how I persuaded you. And they'll say, no, I chose the number 7 because my son is 7 years old. And what's really going on, and this is what I tell them, is when we make decisions, we make them emotionally first, and then we back them up with logic. My job is to touch on the emotion side, that subconscious side of the decision-making process. And by the way, all decisions, including buying decisions, are this way. They're emotional first, and then we back them up with logic. So that's an example of what will happen in an entertainment show and how it can apply to the sales process. Understanding that people make decisions emotionally obviously is a huge benefit to a salesperson, and understanding how that decision-making process works so that you can appeal to those areas of the human mind. So that's what they'll do. They'll say, I chose it because my son was 7. Well, guess what? Your house is the number 4. Why didn't you choose number 4? Your other child is 13 or 6 or whatever. Why didn't you choose those numbers? You chose the number because of the subconscious subliminal influence, the emotional side, and then you backed it up with logic. And that's how we all make our decisions.
Very interesting. So now, given your obviously unique path to public speaking, do you believe that it is a learned skill or something that you're born being able to do, and why?
I don't know that I've seen anyone who is a born speaker. I do believe that people like to have that image of being a natural, of being confident, of being someone who is very comfortable and at ease speaking in public. But I know from my own experience, and that's really, I guess, all I can answer for, is that it was a road, it was a process, it was a journey, really, to get to the point where I felt comfortable, that I felt confident in speaking. So it was absolutely a learned skill, and again, this is just my experience, but looking back, I have certainly given some bad presentations over the years early on, and that is proof right there, the difference between then and now, the fact that things are learned and were learned for me. It's not something I came out of the womb being comfortable and confident on the platform.
I can just imagine the baby immediately going, hey, I'm on the stage.
Right, right.
Now imagine that you are a public speaking superhero, not just pretending to be.
Right, right.
What do you believe would be your main superpowers?
Well, I would really say that the number one difference maker for me, the one ability that I have developed that has really made the difference, really taken me from where I was to where I am, has really been responsible for a lot of the results and just direction of my business, has been the ability to persuade and to influence others. And I know that sounds like a really negative thing. In fact, people often say that persuasion is manipulative or evil in some way. But the truth is, and again, I love this term superpower, because it really is just that. It's a power, and it can be used for good or it can be used for evil. So when I train salespeople, I always tell them, hey, listen, you can use these techniques, these persuasion techniques, to get somebody to buy something that isn't right for them so that you can make the sale. You can do that. But you're only going to have short-lived success. Your reputation will precede you, of course. In the end, in the long term, it is not a wise decision to do that. Of course, you make a little bit of money, you make your commission up front, but long term, your business will suffer, your reputation will suffer, and ultimately, your persuasive ability will suffer. Because one of the most important elements of being a persuasive person is having that trust. The reason I selected persuasion as this superpower is because it really, for speakers, hits home on two fronts. If you're a speaker, you are essentially a persuader. You're on the platform, you're on the stage, you're delivering a message, and you are ultimately trying to persuade your audience. You're trying to persuade them to have a good time and laugh and enjoy themselves. You're trying to persuade them to change a certain behavior in their lives so that they can improve themselves. Ultimately, we got into speaking to really make a difference in people's lives. And if that's not the reason you're in public speaking, if you're in it for the money or something other than that, then again, you may have some short-lived success, but you're not going to have that longevity that you really need. I know, Karma, we were talking before the recording saying how important passion is, and that is extremely, extremely important. We have a passion for changing people's lives, so you ultimately are a persuader. It is difficult to motivate people to change. In fact, as a mentalist, I do a lot of routines where I apparently predict the future. What I'm really doing is just predicting human behavior and some of the influence as well. But the truth is we fall into patterns and we are very, very predictable. So it's very difficult to break those patterns and to change our habits. And as speakers, it's our job to be able to persuade people to do that. But secondly, the other reason it hits home for speakers is because we need to be able to persuade people to hire us as well, don't we?
Oh, very true.
We need these sales techniques. We need these persuasion tactics or techniques to be able to do that. So when I give training, I train people on what I call the COMPEL method, and it involves six elements. COMPEL, each stands for a part of the persuasive process. And whether or not you know you're using these techniques, if you use them, you'll be successful. And whether or not you know that you're not using the techniques, if you don't use them, then you won't be successful. So it's nice to be able to do these things and do them intentionally so that you can communicate the persuasive message that you hope to communicate. And remember, this is our livelihoods on the line. If we can't sell ourselves, we do not have a chance to impact anyone on the stage. We don't have a chance, in some cases, to eat because there's no money coming in. So all these things are extremely important. That's why I chose this as being the number one difference maker in my speaking business.
And you know, it's kind of interesting. I had never really thought of this before because a lot of the speaking I do is training. I'm usually teaching people. I'm not really necessarily trying to change their mind or get them to take a specific action. And yet, when you put it that way, I realize that when you train someone, when you're teaching them something new, you are persuading them, just not in an overt, persuasive way. You're persuading them to think new things that they didn't think before because it's new to them.
Exactly. And you need to do, let me give you an example from the Compel model. The letter C is really the foundation for everything, and that stands for the word confidence. So those people who are listening to your training, they need to have confidence in you in order for them to take seriously what you're saying. The other element of confidence, of course, is you need to be confident in yourself. I mean, those are the double-edged sword of confidence. You need to feel confident in order to portray confidence. And you need to have people feel confident in you as well. So that is extremely, extremely important. And you're right, it is an element of the persuasive process. It is an element. Teaching anybody anything really is persuading them to adopt that mindset or that technique as their own. Otherwise, if you don't make any lasting change in those people that you're speaking to, they're not going to bring you back.
Right.
If you don't persuade them to change and to be different or to be better or to grow in this training process, then you haven't done your job. So really is, like you said, it's kind of a mind shift. It really is persuasion in a way.
Yeah, I was just even thinking of like on a really elementary level, like when you're learning that 2 + 2 = 4. You don't think of that as persuading someone that 2 + 2 = 4, and yet you are.
Right. There's a lot of connotations to the word persuasion and to every word. And this is another thing that I talk about extensively is it's not only what you say, it's what they hear. That's more important. So the word persuasion, when I say that to you, you may hear again something negative. You may hear something that you associate with persuasion, or any number of things could happen.
That is so true, because everyone has their own definitions in their head of various words.
Correct. So the word persuasion, an illustration that I use when teaching this principle is that persuasion is almost like a brick. Think of it as a brick. Now, a brick is not immoral, and a brick is not moral. There's no inherent moral value to a brick. There's no inherent immoral value to a brick. A brick is amoral. So, of course, it's what you bring to the brick. The intention that you bring to the brick makes it either an immoral or a moral thing. So you can take the brick, you can throw it through a window and begin looting. You can throw it at a person, try to harm them. Or you could take that same brick and combine it with some other bricks and build a hospital or build a school. And these types of things, of course, are very, very different from each other. And for the same exact thing, there certainly are people who can take the techniques that I teach and use them for bad things. Remember, we said this is a power. All power can be abused. Extremely important, of course, that your intention, and this is another major part of the training that I go through with people, that your intention is in alignment with keeping things positive.
Right. And ultimately, if you have your audience's best interests in mind, your best interests will be taken care of.
Correct. That's exactly right.
So what advice would you give someone if they want to develop the power of persuasion?
Well, I would love to briefly take you through the Compel model. Certainly don't have time to go into any detail or in depth, but I'd love to just sort of give you an overview of the skill sets that you would need to develop in order to be a persuasive or influential person. Now, we already covered a little bit of how important confidence is, not only in yourself and who you are, but in the idea that you are trying to persuade people to adopt. So if you're a salesman and you don't believe in the product, you're not going to have much success. The letter O is something that people overlook a lot. And again, I'm going to kind of stick with the sales element here because I do a lot of sales trainings, but also because as a public speaker, you really are a salesman. As we mentioned before, you're selling your ideas from the platform, but you're also selling your services. So any good salesman, what they need to do is when they are in the middle of the persuasive process, when they're discussing, let's say, a deal with a meeting planner, then you need to be able to observe that person, be it over the phone, be it in person, or even through email. Looking at the words between the words in email is very tricky. One of those with a lot of ambiguity with words, as you said. I'm sure you've had that experience where you get an email from someone or you send an email to someone and things are just completely misunderstood. In fact, of course, there's that famous statistic that says only about 7% of what we communicate is the actual words that we say.
In fact, I have a good example of that. For some reason, I've picked up Teddy Roosevelt's phrase, bully. Well, when you say it, it means one thing, but when I emailed it to someone, they thought I was calling them a bully.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. So those types of things are extremely important. Now, people often can misconstrue that meaning. 93% of all of our communication is nonverbal. What that really means is 93% of the emotional content that we're communicating with other people is nonverbal. In fact, it's broken down where 55% is body language and 38% is the what they call paralanguage, which is the words in between the words, the inflection that we use, our tone of voice, the pauses, dying, all those types of different things that aren't really words, but they're kind of in between the words. That makes up 38% called paralanguage. And being able to know how to use these different things and how to touch on other people's emotions and be able to read their body language is extremely important in the persuasive process. Again, all decisions are emotional, so you need to be able to communicate emotional content, and that is how you do it, through that 93% of what you're communicating with people. And you're doing it whether you know it or not, so it's better to be intentional with what you're communicating. So if you're standing a certain way, you're communicating something to people, whether you know it or not. If you are shaking their hand in a certain way, you're communicating something to that person, whether you know it or not. So you might as well communicate what you want to communicate and not give someone the wrong idea or the wrong impression or give someone a bad vibe about you, if you will. The technique I'm talking about here, again, it's a two-way street, but it's called the O of Compel. It's observe. Too many salespeople, too many speakers, that's what we do. We speak too much. If you're trying to sell something, you need to let the other person talk. You need to observe where they're coming from so that you can create something that's going to be win-win for the both of you. So that's extremely important. Anytime you're trying to persuade someone, anyone, any audience, any client, you need to observe. And people mess this up more often than almost anything else in the Compel model. So the next letter in the Compel model is M, and this stands for maintain rapport. A lot of people talk about rapport. We put this central in the Compel model for a few reasons. Number one, because that's how you spell Compel. Number two, the reason it's central and the reason we use the word maintain rapport is because you need to maintain throughout the entire process from beginning to end. And the beginning isn't necessarily what you think the beginning is, and the end isn't necessarily what you think the end is, but you need to maintain rapport before, during, and after any kind of sale that you make. So maintain rapport is extremely important. Again, you need to do that with your body language. You need to do that with the words you say. You need to do that with how you say the words you say and everything in between. The letter P, and I'm going to start going a little more quickly here, stands for pique their interest. You need to pique the interest. If you're giving a speech and they are bored, you will not get through them if they're not listening to you. Everything that you do is a waste of time. If you are trying to sell something to someone and they are not interested, everything else that you do is a waste of time. You need to pique interest before you really get into the in-depth of the persuasion. So the letter E stands for engage emotions. We talked about this a little bit earlier. This is one of my favorite sections. I do a lot of radio interviews and things like that, and this is one of the things that people really like to talk about because they have a lot of cool sort of ninja tactics about how to bring out certain emotions from people, how to touch on certain hot buttons. So this technique, this area of the Compel model is one of my absolute favorites, and there's some really, really, really powerful things inside this section of the Compel model. And then lastly is the letter L, and that stands for lead the way. This is another thing that a lot of people mess up. They get people all the way right up until the point where they're ready to make the sale, and then they never take that last step. They never lead the way. They never ask for the sale. They never close the deal, if you will. So that technique of leading the way is, of course, discussed in depth in our Compel training. But yeah, these all together, when you break it down, the first three, the COM, really are the foundational elements, and the PEL really are the advanced techniques that you'll use during the actual persuasive process. So it really is, again, a complete model, and if you're using it, then you will have success more often than not, whether or not you know that you're using these techniques in tandem. And again, conversely, if not using it, then you won't have success, whether or not you know that you're not using it.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for sharing your unique wisdom with us today.
It was a blast, and like I said, I love this project, and I really wish you the best of luck with it.
Thank you. This is the end of today's episode of Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence, signing off.
Because this was recorded a few years back, I've cut the speaker's contact information from the recording because it may have been out of date. If you would like to learn more about today's speaker, go to publicspeakingsuperpowers.com/featured speakers and click on his picture. I'm working to keep the information there as fresh as possible.